Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am reading articles from the San Angelo Standard Times, published the week of Sunday, July 31st, 2022. I'll begin with a few local articles that they have, continue with state articles that were published in the Standard Times, then local sports, and then a couple of feature columns. Local. Two train cars damaged at Railway Museum of San Angelo, by Rosanna Frere, published August 2nd. The Railway Museum of San Angelo had two of its train cars damaged over the weekend in separate incidents. On Saturday, July 30th, museum staff discovered a shattered window on the door of their historical Santa Fe Railroad caboose. The damage appeared to be intentional and possibly an attempt for breaking and entering, the museum stated in a press release. Being in the public spotlight produces positive attention for visitor engagement. However, sometimes it can also attract attention from unfavorable guests, such as vandals, the release stated. This is not the first time the museum has repaired damages to this caboose, and it isn't the only type of harm it has received. 2 days later, on the morning of Monday, August 1st, the president of the museum's board of directors, Susana Valenzuela, received a call stating the mini caboose, located at the corner of Chadburn Street and Hardman Pass, had been knocked over and badly damaged. When Valenzuela arrived at the scene, she was shocked to see the amount of destruction caused to not only the mini caboose signage, but presumably to the culprit's vehicle, the release stated. It is believed someone drove off Chadburn Street and struck a tree and the caboose, severely damaging the caboose and dragging it about 15 feet away from its original location, the release stated. Tire marks, pieces of the vehicle's bumper, and a significant amount of oil spilled were found at the scene, according to the release. These two unexpected disasters taking place in the same weekend has put the Railway Museum of San Angelo in an adverse financial position, the release stated. Valenzuela said they are working with the local glass company for quotes and a timeline on repairs for the window. The mini caboose will also be assessed to see if it can be salvaged. The museum is celebrating its 25th anniversary from September 8th through the 11th. The Railway Museum is owned by the City of San Angelo, but the museum is maintained by the nonprofit Railway Museum Board. Memberships, sponsorships, donations, and admissions keep the museum running. For example, this year the board worked hard to get a grant to replace the HVAC system, a $70,000 expense, Valenzuela said. We're trying to figure out if the driver who hit the caboose has insurance. We are reevaluating and upgrading the security system now to make sure it covers our outdoor displays. If you would like to help the museum with repairs, call 325-340-3363 or email info.railwaymuseum@gmail.com. And now we move to state articles published in the Standard Times. With rural Texas watching, Abbott and O'Rourke dig in on school vouchers right, by Patrick Svivak, Texas Tribune, published August 3rd. A battle over school vouchers is mounting in the race to be Texas governor, set into motion after Republican incumbent Greg Abbott offered his clearest support yet for the idea in May. His Democratic challenger, Beto O'Rourke, is hammering Abbott over the issue on the campaign trail, especially seeking an advantage in rural Texas, where Democrats badly know they need to do better and where vouchers split Republicans. O'Rourke's campaign is also running newspaper ads in at least 17 markets, mostly rural, that urge voters to reject Greg Abbott's radical plan to defund public schools. Abbott, meanwhile, is not shying away from the controversy he ignited when he said in May that he supports giving parents the choice to send their children to any public school, charter school, or private school with state funding, following the student. He met privately last week with Corey DeAngelis, an aggressive national school choice activist who had previously criticized Abbott as insufficiently supportive of the cause. School choice tends to refer to the broad concept of giving parents the option to send their kids to schools beyond their local public school, while vouchers would allow parents to use state tax dollars, to subsidize tuition for those other options, including private schools. Opponents of vouchers say they harm public school systems by draining their funding. In the legislature, vouchers have long encountered resistance from Democrats and rural Republicans, whose public schools are the lifeblood of their communities. O'Rourke is leaning into the bipartisan salience of the issue. For our rural communities, where there's only one school district and only one option of public school, he wants to defund that through vouchers. Take your tax dollars out of your classroom and send it to a private school in Dallas or Austin or somewhere else at your expense, O'Rourke told a rural audience recently. It is a quote that O'Rourke's campaign is repeating in a digital ad that argues Abbott has left behind rural Texas. Abbott's campaign said O'Rourke's newspaper ads are a complete lie, accusing O'Rourke of siding with union bosses over parents. The governor strongly believes parents deserve more involvement in their children's education, Abbott spokesperson Mark Miner said in an email. The real question is, why is O'Rourke so afraid of parental involvement with their children's education? Shouldn't families across Texas have the same opportunities that Beto's parents had to send their kids to the school of their choice? O'Rourke went to a public school, El Paso High School, for 2 years before attending a private all-male boarding school in Virginia. His campaign has been running the newspaper ads since the end of the school year around high school graduations. They have appeared in newspapers with decisively rural readerships, like the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, Amarillo Globe, and Nacogdoches Daily Sentinel. They are customized to each market, telling readers of the Abilene Reporter News, for example, that they should not let Greg Abbott privatize public education in Abilene. O'Rourke's campaign said it spent around $40,000 on the newspaper ads, a drop in the bucket compared with the $23.9 million cash on hand it had at the end of June, let alone Abbott's $45.7 million in reserves. But it is the first known paid media the campaign has done beyond its online advertising, and it marks a deliberate choice by O'Rourke's campaign to appeal to rural voters who have been key to blocking a Democratic breakthrough statewide. O'Rourke has been outspoken about vouchers before, including during his 2020 presidential campaign, when his statements directed attention to his wife, Amy O'Rourke, who founded a charter school and continues to advocate for them. Asked about that in the context of the current race, O'Rourke spokesperson Chris Evans provided a statement reiterating that O'Rourke will put an end to Greg Abbott's attacks on public education and noted his three kids attend public schools in El Paso. Texas Democrats are acutely aware they need to improve their margins in rural Texas if they want to have a better chance of winning statewide. Delegates to the state party convention last month re-elected the chair, Gilberto Hinojosa, after a competitive race in which the party's neglect of rural Texas was hotly debated. In a recent interview, Hinojosa said rural Texas was the primary reason Beto was not able to win at the very end of his 2018 U.S. Senate campaign, even though he came very close. "We have to do better, and we've believed that for a long time," Hinojosa said, adding that it has always been a question of scarceness of resources rather than a question of the party's understanding of the importance of rural Texas. With Abbott's embrace of vouchers, Democrats believe they have a strong opportunity to loosen the GOP stranglehold on rural Texas. Another Democratic statewide candidate, Mike Collier, for lieutenant governor, has been getting the attention of prominent GOP names like U.S. Senator Ted Cruz after tweeting a clip from a recent speech in which he declared, "Vouchers are for vultures." The current lieutenant governor, Republican Dan Patrick, has long championed the proposal, predating Abbott. Abbott himself has acknowledged his May statement was meaningful. Later that month, he asserted to reporters that he has always supported school choice, but wanted to make it abundantly clear not only that I support it, but the strategy to achieve it, where the funding follows the student, which is the way that it should be. Polling on vouchers in Texas can be dicey, given that it is often done by interest groups and the language of questions varies. In an April survey from an independent pollster, the University of Texas at Austin, 45% of voters said they supported and 40% said they opposed redirecting state tax revenue to help parents pay for some of the cost of sending their children to private or parochial schools. The pro-voucher Texas Public Policy Foundation sponsored a poll in February that found 78% of Hispanic adults in Texas, part of a demographic that Republicans are targeting in November, support the right to use tax dollars designated for their child's education to send their child to whatever school, public, charter, or private school, that best serves their needs. And in May, shortly before Abbott's comments, the anti-voucher Texas Parent PAC PAC commissioned a survey that found 46% of likely voters support and 43% oppose a school voucher program in Texas, according to a memo that did not provide the question language. Abbott met July 26 with DeAngelis, who tweeted a picture of the two afterward, shaking hands at Abbott's campaign headquarters in Austin. An Abbott spokesperson, Renee Ees, said they discussed school choice, parental involvement, and various groups working together to ensure Texas students receive the best possible education opportunity. DeAngelis is the National Director of Research at the American Federation for Children. His meeting with Abbott was especially notable since he has previously criticized Abbott over his endorsements of candidates in state house primaries backed by teachers unions. Vouchers continue to face an uphill battle in the chamber, where they have long hit a wall of opposition from Democrats and rural Republicans. Last session, the House voted 115-29 on a budget amendment to ban vouchers, with a majority of Republicans siding with Democrats. The amendment did not make it in the final budget after late negotiations with the Senate. The latest GOP primaries and runoffs did not significantly expand the pro-voucher crowd in the House. School choice groups spent big to unseat two unfriendly GOP incumbents, Representatives Glenn Rogers of Grayford and Kyle Kuchel of College Station, but were unsuccessful. Another rural Republican who opposes vouchers, Representative Drew Darby of San Angelo, said he thought the issue could have an impact on the governor's race. He did not criticize Abbott, but he said he would hope and pray that protecting public education is an issue that drives people to the polls. He said his priority is to represent the communities in his district, and they're dominated by independent school districts that are the lifeblood of our communities, noting they're often the largest employer. If that school district goes away, the identity of that community goes away, Darby said. I am supportive of that institution in those communities, and I want to make sure that they have all the resources they need to certainly maintain the support that efficient system of public free schools, which our Constitution requires. Anything that takes away from that, I will oppose. In other corners of the House GOP caucus, there is growing optimism for school choice next session, especially after Abbott's May statement. The group got a boost 2 months earlier when a GOP primary ballot proposition passed with 88% support that said parents should have the right to select schools, whether public or private, for their children, and the funding should follow the student. One of the most vocal advocates in the House has been Representative Brian Harrison of Midlothian, who said Abbott is right to lean in on the cause. O'Rourke, Harrison said, attended elite private schools, yet sides with liberal extremists to deny poor kids the education opportunities he had. Governor Abbott wants to empower parents with education freedom so every child can get quality education, Harrison said. There may be no more important issue than school choice. It is the right thing to do. It's also a political winner. The latest campaign finance reports also provided fodder for the vouchers fight. One of O'Rourke's biggest donors was the American Federation of Teachers, the second largest teachers union in America that has long opposed vouchers, which gave $300,000. Abbott has had large donors whose districts include school choice, and one of his biggest contributors on the latest filing was Stuart Stedman, a Houston investor and prominent advocate for charter schools, who gave $300,000. Is it time to update the back-to-school sales tax holiday to fit 21st century Texas? Retailers and the author of Texas's original sales tax holiday say the 23-year-old law is overdue for a makeover. By John C. Moritz, Corpus Christi Caller Times, published in the San Angelo Standard Times, August 1st. Austin. In the run-up to George W. Bush's first campaign for the presidency, the newly re-elected and immensely popular Republican governor of Texas was hoping to burnish his image as a tax cutter who would lessen the burden on homeowners and the business class. And that cracked open a window for a Democratic lawmaker to make sure his working class and lower income constituents could share tax savings that were almost assured to be approved by the legislature. The year was 1999, and it would usher in the dawn of what is now a 23-year-old mainstay of the Texas economy, the back-to-school sales tax holiday. At first, articles of clothing were the targets, but within a decade, the holiday was expanded to include backpacks and most traditional school supplies. The savings that came with the vaunted property tax cuts from the Bush era have long melted away as appraisals spiraled, and continue to do. But Texas consumers who flock to retailers, in person and online, August 5th through the 7th, will still save up to 8.25% on purchases of qualifying items that are priced $100 or less. But the lawmaker who authored the bill nearly a generation ago says it's past time to update the legislation to fit the needs of 21st century Texas consumers, and particularly the parents of school children being educated in the digital world. It's more important than ever to improve on what we did back then, said former state senator Rodney Ellis, who left the legislature in 2016 to make a successful run for Harris County Commissioner. Kids today are buying computers, not just notebooks. We need to include electronic devices and increase the amount limits. To illustrate Ellis's point, a fashion article published in the Washington Post in 1999 pointed out that a pair of jeans at the Gap cost about $35. A pair of premium jeans listed on the retail outlet's website today can cost as much as $125. The 1999 buyer would have saved about $2.90 in state and local sales taxes during the back-to-school holiday. This year, the sales tax of about $10.30 would be added to the purchase price. On the school supply side, a 12-pack of legal pads for classroom assignments and homework costs about $15, and the sales tax is waived during the coming holiday. But a basic electronic tablet suitable for school-aged children is not included among the tax-exempt products, no matter the cost, which can range from around $50 into the hundreds. A popular and long-lasting tax cut. The numbers kept by the state comptroller's office suggest the annual tax holiday has proven both popular and profitable for Texas consumers. In its initial year, the comptroller's office calculated the tax savings at about $32 million. By 2019, total savings topped $102 million. Dale Kramer, president of the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association, said his organization takes no official position on sales tax holidays, which in Texas now include annual breaks held in April for emergency supplies and in May for the purchase of energy and water-efficient appliances during Memorial Day weekend. But he said many economists said one-time tax cuts generally do not spur consumers to buy items they otherwise would not. Instead, Kramer said, they simply defer those purchases to coincide with the tax-saving opportunities. They are great politics, but bad policy in the eyes of most purists, he said. But he added, there's anecdotal evidence to suggest the holiday does put shoppers in a buying mood. It creates something of a festival-like atmosphere, and retailers generally love it because it drives people to their stores, Kramer said. A weapon in the inflation fight. Gary Huddleston of the Texas Retailers Association agreed. We think that a lot of customers, especially in this day and time, with inflation the way it is, they're waiting for that holiday, said Huddleston, who noted that the items purchased that qualify for the back-to-school break do not necessarily have to be used in a school setting. That means parents looking to save some money on new clothes and shoes for the children can also save money on things they need for themselves. Huddleston said members of his association have expressed support for updating the holiday to reflect the needs of the modern classroom. The electronics, the tablets, the e-readers, etc. are so prevalent today in schools, so maybe let's take a look at a sales tax break for them, he said. If any changes are made to the tax holiday, Superintendent Judy Wittes of London School District of south of Corpus Christi said moving it to earlier in the summer would be helpful to districts like hers that start the year earlier than most. Our parents would certainly take advantage of that, said Wittes, who oversees four campuses and a student population of about 1,600, where the 2022-23 school year began July 20th. It would certainly be welcome for taxpayers, moms, dads, and teachers. How the Texas tax holiday compares with other states. At least five states offer sales tax breaks for computers as part of the back-to-school holidays, according to the Federation of Tax Administrators, and those breaks are substantial. Florida, Missouri, and Tennessee waive the sales tax on computers that cost $1,500 or less. Alabama sets the cap at $750, and New Mexico tops it at $500. Florida's back-to-school holiday lasts 2 weeks, according to the tax administrators. Illinois has a 10-day holiday. Several states have week-long holidays, including Connecticut, which offers one in the spring and a second late in the summer. Ellis, who said he hopes to buttonhole lawmakers to carry legislation to modernize the tax holiday once they begin to craft their 2023 legislative packages, said Texas should be leading instead of lagging on the issue. He said his case is bolstered because Texas is among only seven states with no personal income tax. His original legislation was as ambitious as that of any other state in the country. A two-week late summer moratorium on sales taxes on most articles of clothing priced at $200 or less per item. Through the legislative process, that plan was pared down to a single weekend moratorium and the price cap lowered to $100. In the legislature, you ask for what you want and you settle for what you can get, Ellis said. Ironically, Ellis's 1999 bill became the vehicle for several other stalled pieces of tax-related measures. Among them were measures ending the sales tax on over-the-counter medicines and diapers. And the package was eagerly signed into law by Bush, whose tax cut bona fides helped propel him to the presidency next year. But it's Ellis, as one of the legislature's most liberal Democrats in his day, who can boast that he is the author of Texas's most far-reaching tax cuts over the past 25 years. But the breaks offered by his legislation and the other tax holidays that came after it have not made Texas's tax structure as fair as he'd like it, Ellis said. The sales tax system in Texas is about as regressive as it can get, he said. People like Elon Musk pay the sales tax on the backpack that someone making minimum wage does. And now to local sports. Grape Creek Eagles ready to take next step after program's first district title. By Adam Reed, special to the Standard Times, published August 2nd. The Grape Creek Eagles are heading into the 2022 football season with a level of excitement they've never experienced before. For the first time in program history, the Eagles can call themselves defending district champions after their surprising run to a share of the District 2 3A Division 2 title last year. It was a breakthrough moment for the program, which began playing varsity football in 1998. And head coach Tanner Thiel said that positive energy carried into the offseason. We had a really good spring and we've had a good summer so far, and we feel like we can basically pick up where we left off, Thiel said. We've got a really good group coming back, and they've got a little taste of success now, and they understand what it takes to win. We're excited. After a 1-4 start last year, Grape Creek finished with a 5-6 record, including a 4-1 mark in district that was highlighted by wins over Ballinger and Sonora. The Eagles lost their playoff opener 27-14 to Alpine. Grape Creek returned 6 starters on defense and 4 on offense, including senior quarterback Cougar Jetton, who Thiel refers to as a Swiss Army knife due to his ability to play multiple positions. He's going to play some fullback. He's going to play some quarterback. He's going to play running back, Thiel said. He can play anywhere. 2 other key players returning are seniors Colton Walker and Tyler Gosnell. Walker earned first team all-district honors last year at defensive back and kicker, and he was a second team wide receiver. Gosnell is a starting offensive lineman and defensive lineman for the Eagles, and Thiel says he's a leader who the team looks up to. He's really going to be our vocal leader, Thiel said. He's really stepped up and kind of taken that role, and all the kids seem to really look to him to lead us, and he's done a really good job of that so far. Grape Creek will open district play October 7th on the road against longtime power Wall, a newcomer to the district that will be considered an immediate contender for the title. Other district newcomers include Early and San Angelo TLCA. The returners alongside Grape Creek are Ballinger and Brady, which handed the Eagles their only district loss last year. We want to continue with what we started and not take a step back, Thiel said. We want to continue fighting for a district championship, and we want to make playoffs. And this go-round, we want to win a playoff game. Wall Hawks, hopeful for season to form in 2022 football season. By Mike Whitson, special to the Standard Times, published August 2nd. Over the course of the previous decade, 2010 to 2020, the Wall High School football team was among the best in the state. Led by coach Houston Guy, the Hawks won 125 games during that span, reached the state quarterfinals 4 times, the semifinals twice, and the state title game in 2013. The 2021 campaign, however, did not approach the Hawks' lofty standards. Wall entered the final game of the regular season needing a win against Early to lock up second place in the district standings. Unfortunately for Wall, that did not happen. We didn't capitalize on some of the things we were doing and ended up losing that ball game in the fourth quarter, said Guy, who is entering his 16th season at the helm and 27th year overall at Wall. We went from second place to fourth place, and then you draw Brock in the first round. State finalist Brock would remain undefeated all the way to the 3A Division I championship game before losing to Lorena. Despite qualifying for the postseason for his 13th consecutive year, Wall finished the season at 5-5, its worst record since 2008. The Hawks wasted little time putting 2021 in the rearview mirror. As soon as that Brock game was over, we started our strength and conditioning program, and it just carried over, said Guy. We've just been really excited about what's to come, especially dropping in realignment and getting to go to Division II. I think that's going to help these guys immensely. The latest biennial UIL realignment moved Wall to District 2-3A Division II, along with Early, Brady, Ballinger, Grape Creek, and TLCA. The Hawks will have plenty of experience heading into the season, returning 8 starters to the offense, which churned out more than 3,000 yards last year. However, Wall graduated its top 3 rushers, all West Texas fullback Dominic Garcia, 103.4 yards per game, quarterback Gabe Haskins, 481 yards, 13 touchdowns, and Andrew Russell, 266 yards, who accounted for 1,678 yards of that offensive production. Anytime you lose a kid like Dominic Garcia, who is just a main force in your offense, a main cog, you're going to have some growing pains, Guy said. And Gabe Haskins had been our starting quarterback for 2 years now, so when you lose a guy that's the trigger man, that's a little bit more of an integral part of your offense. Guy said 3 to 4 prospects will vie for the starting quarterback position, but he expects running back Dane Reynolds and fullback Drake Martin to start in the backfield. Reynolds averaged 7.8 yards per carry last year, and Martin averaged 5.8, as the pair accounted for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns. Guy expects Nathan Pepper and Matthew Steen, among others, to contribute in the run game as well. The offensive line, led by J.D. Reed and Landon Melton, will lead the way for players stepping in to fill those skill positions. If you can control the line of scrimmage, you can run just about any offense you want to, said Guy. The 5 guys we've got coming back here are very intelligent and are just workhorses. They're not a bunch of prima donnas. They just come out here and go to work. I think those guys are going to step up and be a huge part of what we do. Defensively, the Hawks will have to replace linebacker Kenneth Russell, 81 solo tackles, 110 total, but otherwise return 10 starters on that side of the ball. Pepper, named the district's preseason defensive MVP, averaged 8.4 tackles per game last year, and Caleb Vaez averaged 8.2. Ryan Andrews, Dylan Gidney, Logan Thomas, and Jaden Sellers will also factor into the defensive plans. This first week will be a big week for us, evaluating a lot of players and a lot of positions and making sure we get guys in the right spot, said Guy. If our kids will just play hard and stay healthy, I think they have a chance to be very good. I'm not sure how good. We're still going to be really strong, young, starting a lot of juniors and some sophomores. I think the leadership from our senior class will be the guiding light if we're going to be successful this year. Lakeview Chiefs hoping to make a statement in New Look District, by Charles Bryce, published August 1st. Heading into Hector Guevara's 6th year as head coach, the San Angelo Lakeview High School football team will face some new challenges in 2022, and the Chiefs are embracing them. The Chiefs finished 3-8 overall and 1-2 in district last year. They were knocked out of the playoffs in the first round. Lakeview remained in District 2-4A Division 1 during this past spring's realignment. The rest of the district includes Andrews, Big Spring, Brownwood, and Lubbock Estacado. Texas Football Magazine calls it the toughest district in Region 1. Being in a district with more than 4 teams for the first time since 2017, Lakeview won't be guaranteed to make the playoffs like the Chiefs have been the last 4 seasons. A new district rival for Lakeview will be Brownwood. The Lions are steeped in tradition, having won 7 state championships, the last one coming in 1981. Brownwood's going to be tough, but to be honest with you, I think every team in our district is going to be pretty tough, Guevara said. Every one of them has their own unique style of football. I don't know about singling any team out. Andrews brings a lot of game, and so does Brownwood. And then you've got Big Spring, and they were very competitive last year. And then you've got Estacado. I think we've just got to take it week by week and go from there. Lakeview has 6 returning starters on both sides of the ball. Guevara says the Chiefs have some things to lean on while senior quarterback Bryce Medley and other first-year starters get acclimated to performing under the Friday night lights. We've got some kids coming back with some experience at the O-line and at skill positions, so we're excited about that, the Chiefs coach said. And we've got some young guys ready to step up into some roles that I think they'll be successful in. Medley is a 5'10", 185-pounder who can get things done with his arms or legs. He's worked a lot during the offseason, tweaking his skills and fine-tuning his skills, and studying film and watching himself progress, Guevara said. Watching him progress has been good for the staff. Guevara says the Chiefs' new QB has great football acumen to go along with his physical capabilities. I think he has the ability to get a pre-snap read and understand what he's facing, the Chiefs coach said. He's got the intellectual ability to run an audible if need be. And obviously, his legs. He's been an alternate on the mile relay and the 4x200 in the spring. Yeah, I think he can be a dual threat. Having a strong O-line that includes Armando Dominguez, John Cepeda, Alex Alcantar, Willie Rodriguez, and John Hayes will make things easier for Medley as he goes through that maturation process. I think that's going to help a lot, Guevara said. It's going to put Medley at ease a little bit, knowing that he's got guys up front who are able to adjust to fronts and protect him. Running back wide receiver Ricky Ramirez is poised to have a great senior season. Ricky's going to bring something to the table, Guevara said. He can be versatile, and you can use him in different spots in the field and different positions where he can be effective and a threat to a defense. It definitely helps to have that experience. The Chiefs have good depth in the receiving core, which includes Devashtian Manley, Adrian Flores, Wyatt Henry, Derek Taylor, Taven White, Ian Cortez, and Jimmy Garcia. We've got kids who can step in and give kids rest and hopefully not miss a beat, Guevara said. Guevara feels good about how the Chiefs look on the other side of the ball as well. Defensively, I think we're going to be pretty quick, the Chiefs coach said. We're going to be strong up front on the D-line. And as far as DBs and linebackers, we have some experience coming back. I think we're going to be able to rally to football and make plays and hopefully make some chaos on the defensive side of the ball. The D-line includes Juan Ortiz, Eric Paez, Carlos Sanchez, and Andrew Villanueva. White and Ramirez have a lot of experience at the linebacker spots, along with Brandon Cruz, Taylor, Henry, and Flores in the secondary. Lakeview opens the season at home against La Mesa on August 26th for senior night. The rest of the non-district schedule includes matchups against Sweetwater, Vernon, Lubbock High, Leveland, and Greenwood. We'll have some running teams and some passing teams, so hopefully they'll prepare us for district, Guevara said. The 2-4A opener will be on the road against Andrews on October 7th. Texas Football Magazine picks Andrews to win the district title, followed by Brownwood, Estacado, Big Spring, and Lakeview. Once again, the Chiefs will play the role of the underdog and try to surprise some people. We feel like we can be competitive and we can win some games, Guevara said. Hopefully we stay healthy throughout the non-district schedule and then through district. Obviously for us, the toughest thing we've got right now is depth. We just want to be in a position at the end of the game to win ball games, and I think we'll be fine. The Chiefs can't wait to kick things off. We're very excited, Guevara said. Every year is different, and every year we get surprised when somebody steps up, which makes us feel good as coaches. And the kids who are returning who have experience, they work harder, and they want to win and be competitive. And that's all we can ask for. Top 10 high school football coaches to watch in West Texas in 2022 by Amy McDaniel, published August 1st. Here's a look at our top 10 head coaches to keep an eye on during the upcoming 2022 high school football season in West Texas. Number 1, Houston Guy, Wall. With an overall record of 144-44, Guy finished his 15th season as a head football coach last year. All at Wall. He's been at the school for 22 years, having first served as a defensive coordinator. The Hawks won 9 consecutive district championships under Guy and appeared in the 2013 state final and the 2016 state semifinals. The Hawks have gone 43-3 in district play since 2013. Number 2, Casey Otho, Cristoval. Otho has compiled a 51-19 record in 6 seasons as head coach, all at Cristoval. Promoted from assistant in 2016, he is coming off back-to-back undefeated district titles, but also has tied for a district title and finished second another year. His Cristobal milestones include a first-ever 11-man playoff win, 2018, and farthest playoff run in the 11-man era, 2020 state quarterfinals. Number three, Michael McLeod, Mason. Promoted to head coach from his defensive coordinator role after Mason's 16-0 state championship in 2018, McLeod has compiled a 27-10 overall record and coached the Punchers to three undefeated district championships and four playoff wins. Number four, John Elder, Coleman. In eight seasons as a head coach, all at Coleman, Elder has compiled a 58-34 overall record. Seven of those seasons were in 3A Division II. Since moving down to 2A Division I, the Blue Cats have posted a 17-5 mark, including 11-1 last year. The Cats stormed through district play and won two playoff games by a combined score of 105-12 and returned the core of that team for 2022. Number five, Shea Easterwood, Brady. The Brady native survived an 0-10 season to begin his head coaching career and has gone 10-5 in district play the last three seasons, including last season's shared district title that was the Bulldogs' first since 2009. Brady then proved his resurgence with two playoff wins last year. Number six, Jeff Jones, Garden City. In 12 years as a head coach, Jones has compiled an 85-52 record with stints at Marfa and Garden City. In seven seasons coaching the Bearcats, Jones is 65-22 and coached three teams to the state quarterfinals before coaching the 2018 team to the Division I state semifinals. The Bearcats are number five in the TexasFootball.com preseason Class 1A Division I rankings. Number seven, Don Cafell, Erien County. Tasked to take over when the Hornets switched from 11-man to 6-man football, Cafell has compiled a 24-8 record in three seasons and has Erien County poised for its best season yet with a number 10 preseason ranking in Class 1A Division I. He has a 106-80 overall record in 19 years as a head coach and notched his 100th career win last season. Number 8, Tanner Thiel, Great Creek. Thiel capped his fifth year at Great Creek with a share of the school's first-ever district championship, and by being named All-West Texas Coach of the Year, he has compiled an 11-30 overall record, all at Great Creek, but was 5-6 during last year's breakthrough season. Number 9, Kevin Crane, San Angelo Central. Crane, a highly successful offensive coordinator for the Bobcats for 12 years, guided Central to a 4-7 overall mark and a playoff berth in his first season as Central's head coach. The Bobcats should be buoyed by their first district track championship since 1996 and appearance in the championship bracket of the state's 7-on-7 tournament. Number 10, Blake Weston, Sonora. In his first season back with the program, where he spent the majority of his coaching career, Weston led the Broncos to a share of a district championship last year with a 7-5 overall record and a bi-district championship. He has a career record of 20-35 in five seasons, his first four coming at Reagan County. Wild card, Trey Sisco, Sterling City. The Class 1A Division I Coach of the Year in 2020 by the Texas Six-Man Coaches Association after an undefeated state championship, Sisco coached the Eagles to the state quarterfinals last season in their swan song of six-man football. Now, Sisco will lead Sterling in its move to 11-man for at least the next two seasons and has a 56-16 record in six seasons, all at Sterling City. The Eagles won 25 of their last 28 six-man football games, but can they carry that success to 11-man? Angelo State picked to repeat as Lone Star Conference football champs by Corey Hoag, special to the Standard Times, published July 29th, McKinney. The Lone Star conference title goes through San Angelo. At least it does according to the conference's preseason football poll. Following a run to the NCAA Division II quarterfinals, Angelo State is the favorite to win the Lone Star Conference after receiving 15 of 27 first-place votes in the preseason poll at the LSC Media Day. The Rams are led by junior running back Nathaniel Omwambu III, who garnered 2022 LSC Preseason Offensive Player of the Year honors after rushing for 1,085 yards and 10 touchdowns last season. ASU coach Jeff Gersh knows winning the conference title and making another run in the playoffs will not come easily. It will be a tough task to repeat and improve on last year. You play outstanding football teams every week in the Lone Star Conference, Gersh said. It's going to come down to our kids executing the game plan, staying healthy, and playing better special teams because we weren't good in that area at times last year. Defending LSC champion Midwestern State is second in the poll and received 9 first-place votes. MSU coach Bill Maskell's team missed out on the playoffs despite winning the conference title, and he understands his team must limit mistakes to repeat as champs. We can't have 7 turnovers and expect to win like we did at Central Washington last year, Maskell said. We were ahead at West Texas at halftime, but we couldn't duplicate that for 4 quarters. Maskell plans to use fall camp to help his team deal with adversity during a game. We always have something to do with adversity during fall camp, but I'm going to do a better job this year with the adversity part and go through how to respond to things, Maskell said. We do this by bringing it back to real-life experiences that have happened to us and discussing how to overcome those times. Can we get better? We're going to have to be better to get better, and we're not there yet. LSC newcomer Central Washington is the 3rd team in the poll. CWU is part of the 4 Great Northwest Athletic Conference teams that joined the LSC as affiliate members in football. West Texas A&M followed CWU in the poll at 4th. The Buffs earned 1 first-place vote in the preseason poll and will be led by sophomore linebacker J.T. Cavender, who was named 2022 LSC Preseason Defensive Player of the Year after leading the conference with 104 tackles last year. Buffs coach Hunter Hughes believes his squad can challenge for the LSC title and a playoff berth if they play with more consistency each week. We can't beat ourselves, Hughes said. I think we're good enough to compete and win the title if we focus on ourselves more than who the opponent is. We beat some good teams, but we've been beaten by some teams that I thought we should beat. The players have to hold themselves accountable. Coaches can push them and tell them what to do, but they have to do some things on their own. The teams where players police themselves are the better team. UT Permian Basin holds 2 first-place votes and places 5th in the preseason projection. Texas A&M Kingsville is 6th in the poll and may be the most dangerous team to challenge the conference's top tier under coach Mike Salinas. We were slightly lower last year, and I think we exceeded expectations. We want to improve, and we think we can improve on a year ago, Salinas said. I'm looking forward to the fall and seeing if we can progress to the next step in our program. The key for the Javelinas is who will win the quarterback battle. The 2021 LSC Preseason Offensive Player of the Year, Miklo Smalls, is a member of the competition after transferring to Kingsville from Texas A&M Commerce. Smalls will battle Sierra College transfer Quentin Pilcher for the starting nod. We felt good about our quarterback room at the end of spring ball and let our guys know that if we had somebody who could potentially make us better, we'd recruit them, Selena said. We have a great room and a great group of guys, and they know it's about competition. Western Oregon is 7th in the poll, while Eastern New Mexico and Western New Mexico followed at 8th and 9th, respectively. Simon Fraser rounds out the projection in the 10th position. Walls Everson Armstrong to play for Angelo State men's basketball next fall. by Amy McDaniel, published July 28th. Wall High School's Everson Armstrong has committed to play basketball for Angelo State University, the senior to be announced Thursday on his social media accounts. The decision by Armstrong, a 6'5" guard, makes him the second Hawk to recently agree to play for the Rams and the second Rising Wall senior to make an early commitment to compete in athletics starting next fall. Recent graduate Jacob Richardson signed in May to play for the ASU men's basketball team this fall. Cameron Williams, earlier this summer, announced she would play volleyball for the Rambels next fall. Armstrong was the 2021 All-West Texas Most Valuable Player as a sophomore, but was sidelined for much of his junior season with an injury. He was able to return to the court and help Wall win a district championship, being named district offensive MVP in the process. Richardson, the son of former Wall girls basketball coach Kevin Richardson, was able to take up some of the slack for Armstrong's absence and was named the district MVP. The two teammates and friends will now get to play together again, as Richardson was part of the first recruiting class for new ASU coach Vinay Patel, who was introduced May 2nd. Patel, a 17-year coaching veteran who most recently served as the head coach at Northwestern Oklahoma State University, replaced Cinco Boone. Armstrong hopes to return strong for his senior season at Wall, where the Hawks have won 8 consecutive district titles, including the last 2 under coach Travis Dawson. Armstrong wrote that he was beyond blessed to be staying home in San Angelo and thanked the coaching staff for believing in me and thanked his parents for pushing me to be the best I can be. Williams, whose parents both competed in track for Angelo State, and whose brother Tate plays football for Baylor, helped her team win a district title last year and was the All-West Texas MVP. She made her decision to play for ASU head coach Chuck Weddington in late June. And now here is the feature column about wine, written by Gus Clemens. Sauvignon Blanc has shed its image as a cheap jug wine. Published August 2nd. Sauvignon Blanc is versatile all year, but it particularly shines in the scorching summer we endure this year. Its crisp acidity and tropical fruit flavors complement lighter dishes and salads. Sauv Blanc often is called salad in a glass. Nicely chilled, Sauv Blanc easily is appreciated at the end of a triple-digit day. Sauv Blanc is an uncomplicated wine, with vines rambunctiously eager to please. When wine growers neglect to prune, the wine can have little distinction. That was the case in the 1970s and 1980s, when California growers went for quantity instead of quality. Sauv Blanc rightly earned a reputation as a cheap jug wine, box wine. Led by Robert Mondavi, some winemakers knew Sauv Blanc could achieve more and attempted to create a market for Fumé Blanc, or similar made-up marketing name. Unfortunately, many pursued an oaky style that did Sauv Blanc no flavor favors. Then, New Zealanders found ways in vineyards and wineries to evoke more fruit expression, creating a style now imitated even in France. Marlborough, in the northern part of the Southern Island, began producing world-class pours in the 1980s, food-friendly wines with tongue-cutting acidity and vivid citrus fruits. Much of Sauvignon Blanc is made to drink young, often released shortly after harvest. That pleases winemakers. They get to turn juice into cash quickly. It also pleases a lot of consumers, since you can easily get quality in the $12 to $18 range. If you want, however, you can go high-end. Screaming Eagle, Oakville, makes a Sauv Blanc that sells for $5,900, down from $7,180 last year. In France, where wine names come from places and not the varietal, the French call it Sancerre or Pouilly Fumé. Sancerre is on left bank of the Loire River, Pouilly Fumé on the right bank. Daguignan Osterode Puy Fumé goes for $1,791 a bottle. Edmond Vatton Clos La Noire Sanway costs $494 a bottle. Taking notes. Concha y Toro Gran Reserva Sauvignon Blanc, Rappel River, 2021. Congenial, easy drinker rather than boisterous, assertive Sauv Blanc, but retains SB's ability to enhance and complement food, $13 to $16. Wairoa River Sauvignon Blanc, Marlborough, 2021. Delivers what you want and expect from a New Zealand Sauv Blanc, $15 to $20. Aperture Cellar Sauvignon Blanc, 2020. Dollop of Semillon adds a subtle boost. Whole cluster pressing delivers depth and complexity, $40 to $45. Last round. This summer has been so hot, when I turn on my sprinkler, steam comes out. Wine time. Email wine at cwadv.com. Newsletter, gusclemens.substack.com. Website, gusclemensonwine.com. And now, here is our column from Allison Watkins. Hot summer weather is a good reason to try indoor gardening. Published July 29th. The extreme weather this summer has forced landscapes and gardeners into survival mode, just trying to hang on until rain and cooler temperatures arrive this fall. It's a good time to try out some house plants and indoor gardening. Buy seeds and start your own fall vegetable transplants inside. Buy a house plant like a philodendron, or try cultivating some herbs with an indoor kitchen garden. For permanent houseplants, choose those that are adapted to low light levels. Selection and care are quite different for plants that stay inside the home than the typical landscape plants. Some of the toughest houseplants that work well in most homes include Christmas cactus, philodendron, ficus, pothos ivy, sansevieria, ZZ plant, dracaena, and aglaonema. Two major factors to focus on with houseplants are light and water. Plants that are known to be good for inside a building are generally tropical plants native to areas with very dense canopies that can handle lower light levels. But all plants need some light to grow. And even houseplants need more light than is usually available in the home to grow well and thrive. A simple test to measure light levels and help choose the best spot for houseplants can be done by holding your hand about 12 inches above the surface in question, floor, table, etc., during the brightest time of day. Look for the hand shadow. If it has a clear and distinct dark shadow, that is a high light level. If it has a fuzzy outline and is a faint light shadow, that is low light. Match plants with the proper amount of light that they need based on the label directions. Watering house plants can be tricky. Many plants do best when they can be watered thoroughly and the excess water is allowed to drain away well. But house plants tend to be watered lightly and more frequently, and there is usually a tray underneath to catch the excess water, which can create standing water for long periods of time. If possible, place house plants in a sink or tub, water thoroughly, and allow to drain well before returning. Indoor herb gardens are very popular and can be a nice feature in the kitchen, providing beauty, fresh fragrance, and interest. While many herbs are easy to grow outdoors in the West Texas climate, it's important to remember that most herbs are not naturally suited to be house plants. That's not to say it can't be done. Start with finding the right spot where they can get 6 to 8 hours of direct sun, like a south-facing window. Just about any herb can be started indoors, but not all can be permanently grown in small containers. Many herbs grow to be large plants, like sage and rosemary, so either stick to smaller plants like basil, thyme, and parsley, or if growing larger plants, Just plan to start over every so often to keep plants small and manageable for an indoor garden. Once they outgrow their container, they can be planted outside or given away. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.